Chapter 43. After Kelly left the aircraft in Washington, she was escorted to an unmarked van that transported her to Lauren's townhouse in Arlington. Pitt and Giordino saw her off and entered a Numa Lincoln Navigator and relaxed as the driver steered the car toward Landover, Maryland. 20 minutes later, they turned onto Arena Drive and drove into the vast parking lot of FedEx Field, the stadium that is home to the Washington Redskins football team. Built in 1997, it can accommodate 80,116 fans in wide, comfortable seats. Restaurants on the end zones serve a wide variety of ethnic foods. 2 huge video screens for replays and 4 scoreboards make it enjoyable for fans to follow the finer points of the game. The Navigator rolled into the underground VIP parking area and stopped by a doorway guarded by 2 security men in combat gear holding automatic rifles. They stopped Pitt and Giordino and studied their faces with photographs provided to them by Numa's security department before allowing them to pass into a long corridor that stretched beneath the seats of the stadium. 4th door on the left, gentlemen, instructed one of the guards. Doesn't this strike you as overkill? Giordino asked Pitt. Knowing the Admiral, he must have a good reason. They reached the door and found another armed guard outside. He merely studied them for a quick moment, then swung open the door and stepped aside. I thought the Cold War was over years ago, Giordino muttered quietly. They were mildly surprised to find themselves in the locker room for the visiting football teams. Several people were already seated in the team management office. Lauren was there, with Sally Morse. Admiral Sandecker, Rudy Gunn, and Hiram Yeager represented Numa. Pitt recognized Admiral Amos Dover of the Coast Guard, Captain Warren Garnett of the Marines, and Commander Miles Jacobs, who was a veteran of Navy SEAL operations. He and Giordino had worked with all of them in the past. The only one who was not familiar was a tall man with the distinguished good looks you'd expect from a cruise ship captain. Adding to his image of a mariner was a black patch over the left eye. Pitt guessed him to be in his late 50s. Pitt momentarily shuffled the stranger to one side of his mind as he greeted his Numa associates and shook hands with the military men he'd known from past adventures. Dover, a great bear of a man, had worked with Pitt on the Deep Six project. Garnett and Jacobs had been engaged in a losing firefight in the Antarctic until Pitt and Giordino had made a timely appearance in Admiral Byrd's colossal snow cruiser. Only after a few pleasantries were exchanged did Pitt focus his attention on the man with the eye patch. Dirk, said Sandecker, may I introduce Wes Rader? Wes is an old naval friend. We served in the Baltic Sea together, keeping an eye on Russian submarines heading out into the Atlantic. Wes is a senior deputy director at the Justice Department and will coordinate all activities from the legal end. Questions rose in the back of Pitt's mind, but he waited until the proper moment to present them. Alone, he would have hugged Lauren and kissed her boldly on the lips. But this was business, and she was a member of Congress, so he merely made a slight bow and shook her offered hand. Nice to see you again, Congresswoman. Likewise, Lauren said, with a sly glint in her eye. She turned to Sally. This is the man I was telling you about. Sally Morse, meet Dirk Pitt. Sally looked deep into Pitt's opaline green eyes and saw what most women who met him saw, a man they could depend on. I've heard a great deal about you. Pitt gave a side glance at Lauren and smiled. I hope your source didn't lay it on too thick. If everyone will please find a chair and get comfortable, said Sandecker, we'll start the proceedings. He sat down, pulled out one of his immense cigars, but in deference to the ladies present, did not light it. He probably could have without protest. The women would probably have preferred it to the smells of sweat that still hung in the air of the locker room from the last football game. Gentlemen, as some of you are already aware, Ms. Morse is the CEO of the Yukon Oil Company. She will describe a grave threat to our national security and the citizens of our country that concerns us all. He turned to Sally. The stage is yours.
Pardon me for interrupting, Admiral, said Raider, but I'm at a loss as to why we're playing all these security games. Meeting in the locker room of a football stadium seems a bit overdone. You'll have your question answered as soon as Ms. Morris makes her report. He nodded at Sally. Please begin.
For the next 2 hours, Sally gave a detailed narrative of Curtis Merlin Zale's grand scheme to create an oil monopoly and gain enormous wealth while dictating terms to the United States government. When she finished, there was a heavy cloud of incredulity in the room. Finally, Wes Raider spoke.
Are you certain what you've told us is true?
Every word, Sally said resolutely. Raider turned to Sandecker. This threat goes far beyond the people in this room. We've got to notify others immediately. The President, the leaders of Congress, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, my boss at the Justice Department. That's just for starters.
We can't, Sandecker said, and passed out copies containing the names of members of Congress, agency officials, people in the Justice Department, and close aides to the President in the West Wing.
And this is why. This is the reason for the secrecy, he said to Raider. The names of the people you see in your hand have all been bought and paid for by Cerberus and Curtis Merlin Zale.
Impossible, said Raider, scanning the names in utter disbelief.
There would have to be a vast paper trail.
The money was paid through overseas companies owned by other companies owned by Cerberus, answered Sally.
All funds and payoff monies are in offshore accounts that would take Justice Department investigators years to track down.
How is it possible one man corrupted the entire system?
Lauren answered for Sally. The members of Congress who could not resist Zale's bribes are those who were not rich men. They may not have given up their ideals and ethics for $1 million, but 10 or 20 million was too much for them to pass on. Those who fell into Zale's trap do not know the full extent of his web. Until now, with thanks to Sally, we are the only ones outside of the Cerberus circle who know of the rampant influence Zale has achieved within the government.
Do not forget the respected members of the news media, added Sally. Those under Zale's thumb can bias the news in his favor. If they balk, he can threaten to expose them, and with their credibility gone, they'd be out of the newsroom and on the street within hours.
Raider shook his head.
I still can't believe one man is responsible, no matter how wealthy he is.
He didn't act alone. Zale had the backing of the most powerful oil barons in the United States and Canada. Not all the money came out of Cerberus.
Yukon Oil, too?
Yukon Oil, too, Sally replied solemnly. I'm as guilty as the others of falling under Zale's spell.
You've more than atoned by coming to us, said Lauren, squeezing Sally's hand.
Why me? Asked Raider. I'm only the number 3 man at the Justice Department.
As you've seen, your name is not on the list, and your direct superiors are, answered Sandecker. I've also known you and your wife for years. I know you to be an honorable man who can't be bought.
You must have been approached, said Lauren.
Raider looked up at the ceiling, trying to recall. Then he nodded.
2 years ago, I was walking my Cocker Spaniel near my house when a strange woman, yes, it was a woman, walked along beside me and struck up a conversation.
Sally smiled. Ash blonde hair, blue eyes, about 5'9", 130 pounds. An attractive woman with a direct approach.
A faithful description.
Her name is Sandra Delage. She's Zale's chief administrator.
Did she make an outright offer of money? Sandecker inquired.
Nothing so crude, Raider replied.
As I remember, she talked in vague terms. What would I do if I won the lottery? Was I happy with my job, and was I appreciated for my efforts? If I could live any place but Washington, where would it be? Apparently, I failed the examination. She left me at an intersection and climbed into a passing car that stopped for her. I never heard another word after that.
It's up to you to get the ball rolling. Zale and his cronies in the Cerberus cartel must be stopped in their tracks and brought to justice, said Sandecker. We're looking at a national scandal of immense proportions.
Where do we begin? Asked Raider.
If Ms. Morse's list of bribed officials is correct, I can't simply walk into the Attorney General's office and announce that I'm arresting him for taking bribes.
You do that, said Lauren, and Zale's team of Viper assassins would make sure your body was found in the Potomac River.
Sandecker nodded at Hiram Yeager, who opened two large cardboard boxes and began passing around a bound set of documents several inches thick.
Utilizing Ms. Morse's accounts and our own investigations into Zale's criminal empire through our NUMA computer facilities, we put together a complete indictment with more than enough solid, established evidence to convince honest officials of what must be done. He looked Raider in the eye.
Wes, you have to put together a team at Justice whose loyalty you can absolutely depend on to build an airtight case. People who are not afraid of threats, like the Untouchables who put away Al Capone. There can be no leaks. If Zale gets the slightest hint of your actions, he'll send out his hit squad.
I can't believe this could happen in America. Many nefarious things go on behind the scenes of business and government that the public doesn't know about, said Lauren.
Raider stared apprehensively at the thick report on the table in front of him.
I hope I'm not biting off more than I can chew.
I'll give you every assistance from the congressional end, Lauren promised him.
Our first priority, said Sandecker, pressing a series of buttons on a remote and lowering a monitor with a display of San Francisco Bay, is to stop that oil tanker from wiping out half of San Francisco. He turned and looked at Dover, Garnett, and Jacobs, who had remained quiet during the discussion. This is where you gentlemen come into the picture.
The Coast Guard will stop the Pacific Trojan from entering the bay, Dover stated flatly.
Sandecker nodded.
Sounds simple, Amos. You've stopped thousands of ships carrying everything from drugs to illegal immigrants to smuggled weapons, but stopping one of the world's largest super oil tankers will take more than firing a shot across its bow and a command through a bullhorn.
Dover smiled at Garnett and Jacobs.
Is this why we have the Navy SEALs and Marine Recon at the table?
You will, of course, be in command of the operation, said Sandecker. But if the captain of the tanker ignores your commands to heave to and continues on his course into the bay, we don't have a whole lot of avenues open to us. The ship must be stopped outside the Golden Gate, but to fire on her and risk causing a monstrous oil spill is out of the question. As a last resort, a combat team will have to be airdropped by helicopter onto the vessel itself and neutralize the crew.
Where is the Pacific Trojan now? Asked Dover.
Sandecker pressed another button on the remote and the map enlarged to show the ocean to the west of the Golden Gate. The chart showed a small image of a ship heading toward the coast of California. Approximately 900 miles out.
That gives us less than 48 hours.
We only received the devastating news from Ms. Morse and Congresswoman Smith in the early hours of the morning.
I'll have Coast Guard cutters waiting to intercept 50 miles out, said Dover solidly.
And I'll have a boarding team in the air as backup, Jacobs assured him.
My SEAL team will stand ready to board from the sea, Garnett added. Dover looked at Garnett dubiously. Your men can board a supertanker from the water while it's underway? An exercise we've rehearsed many times, said Garnett with an almost imperceptible grin. That I'll have to see, said Dover. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Sandecker said quietly, this is as far as Numa can go in this project. We'll help in any way we're asked, and we'll supply the evidence we've accumulated pertaining to the fire and cover-up sinking of the Emerald Dolphin and the near tragedy of the Golden Marlin, but we are a scientific oceanographic agency and not authorized to act as an investigative agency. I leave it to Wes and Lauren to assemble a trusted team of patriots to launch the first phase of an undercover investigation. We have our work cut out for us, Lauren said to Raider. Yes, replied Raider quietly. Some of the people on this list are my friends. I'll be a lonely man when this is over. You won't be the only outcast, said Lauren with a dry smile. I have friends on the list, too. Dover pushed back his chair and stood and looked down at Sandecker. I'll keep you informed every hour on the status of the operation. I appreciate that, Amos. Thank you. One by one, they filed out of the locker room. Pitt and Giordino, along with Rudy Gunn, were asked by Sandecker to remain. As he left, Jaeger put his hand on Pitt's shoulder and asked him to drop by Numa headquarters after he left there and come to the computer floor. Sandecker relaxed in his chair and lit his big cigar. He stared at Giordino with an annoyed look, waiting for him to light up one of his special cigars, too, but Al merely stared back with a patronizing smile. It looks as if you boys are sidelined for the rest of the game. I'm sure you and Rudy won't let us sit on the bench for very long, said Pitt, as he stared from Sandecker to Gunn. Gunn adjusted his glasses. We're sending an expedition to French frigate shoals northwest of the Hawaiian Islands to survey and examine the widespread death of the coral. We'd like Al to head up the investigation. And me? Asked Pitt. I hope you saved your cold-weather gear from the Atlantis project, said Sandecker wryly. You'll be returning to Antarctica in an attempt to penetrate the ice down to the vast lake scientists believe is under the ice cap. A shadow of dissent crossed Pitt's face. I will, of course, follow your directives, Admiral, without argument. But I respectfully request 5 days for Al and me to clear up a mystery concerning Dr. Elmore Egan. The search for his secret laboratory? You know? I have my sources. Kelly, Pitt thought. The old devil had played sympathetic uncle while protecting her from harm by Zale's henchmen. She must have told him about their search for the Vikings and the puzzle behind the legend of the Lost Cave. I strongly believe it is a matter of national security to find out what Dr. Egan was working on when he died, before Zale gets there first. Sandecker looked over at Gunn. What do you think, Rudy? Should we give these two scoundrels 5 days to search for an illusion? Gunn peered over the tops of his glasses at Pitt and Giordino like a fox eyeing a pair of coyotes. I think we can be magnanimous, Admiral. It will take at least 5 days to finish equipping and supplying the survey ships I've scheduled for the project anyway. Sandecker exhaled a cloud of blue aromatic smoke. That's it, then. Rudy will inform you where and when to report on board your survey ships. Then he dropped his gruff edge and said, I wish you luck on your quest. I'm also curious as to what Egan was conjuring up. Jaeger was slouching in his chair, feet stretched out in front of his keyboard, conversing with Max when Pitt arrived from the football stadium. You wanted to see me, Hiram? I'll say. Jaeger straightened and pulled Egan's leather case from a nearby cabinet.
You're just in time for the next act.
Act?
3 more minutes.
I don't follow.
Every 48 hours at precisely 1:15 in the afternoon, this case turns to magic.
It fills with oil, Pitt said hesitantly.
Exactly. Yeager opened the case and waved his hand over the empty contents like a magician. Then he closed it and snapped the latches. He studied the sweep hand on his wristwatch, counting the seconds. Then he said, to reverse the old cliché, now you don't see it, and now you do. He carefully unlatched and lifted the lid. The interior of the case was filled with oil less than an inch from the upper edge.
I know you're not performing black magic, said Pitt, since the same thing happened to Al and me after Kelly Egan gave me the case on the Deep Encounter.
It has to be some sort of trick or illusion, said Yeager, befuddled.
It's not an illusion, said Pitt. It's real enough.
He dipped his finger in the oil and rubbed it between his thumb.
Feels frictionless.
My guess is that it's Dr. Egan's super oil. The million-dollar question is, where is it coming from?
Does Max ever read on it? Pitt asked, staring at the holograph figure on the other side of Yeager's desk.
Sorry, Dirk. I'm as mystified as you, said Max. I have a few ideas I'd like to pursue if Hiram doesn't shut me down when he leaves for home tonight.
Only if you promise not to enter confidential or private sites.
I will try to be a good girl.
The words were there, but the delivery had a conniving tone to it.
Yeager did not think it was funny. Max had gotten him in trouble before, going where she was forbidden to go.
But Pitt could not help laughing.
Have you ever regretted not making Max a male?
Yeager looked like a man who'd fallen into a sewer wearing a tuxedo.
Consider yourself lucky, he said wearily. You're single. Not only do I have to contend with Max, but I have a wife and 2 teenage daughters at home.
You don't know it, Hiram, but you're a man to be envied.
That's easy for you to say. You never let a woman into your life.
No, said Pitt wistfully. That I never did.